Good morning, everyone. I hope you're well and you're all set for a Monday morning. You all had your caffeine fix and you're all attentive and ready to go. Welcome to this morning's panel session on ownership in football. It's been an unusual year in football, and that's not only because England have been winning a few matches for a change, but also because the regulation of off-the-field activities in football has become a topic of conversation for not only the select few football executives and administrators, sports lawyers and accountants, but also for the media and football fans. This renewed focus on the regulation of football has changed, and the changes to existing regulations and the legal challenges that have followed have brought a number of important issues to the floor and have given the football community a lot to reflect on. In the next 45 minutes, our esteemed panel will try to provide an overview of the changes to the regulations of ownership in football from a global, national, club and player perspective. They'll also share their personal views on the changes to the regulations. So, joining us on stage, to my far left, we have Ramon Vega, a former professional football player for clubs such as Tottenham and Celtic, as well as, the list is quite long, so there's too many to get through now. but he's also a very successful businessman. He's a partner and founder of Vega Swiss Asset Management, which has reportedly, I don't mind me saying this, so please don't blush, 655 million of client funds under advisory management. To his right, have to get my right and left fix of this, is Trevor Watkins, the global head of sport for the law firm Pinson Masons. He has extensive experience in football and is renowned as the go-to advisor in football and has built a reputation in the space and was key in the rescue and subsequently became the chairman of AFC Bournemouth. He's also been on the Football League board and was a founder of Supporters Direct. Then to his right, we have Daniel Cravo-Souza. Now, we had a discussion before this and Daniel said I didn't need to pronounce his law firm's name because my Brazilian is not particularly great. I'm not sure if you would like to help me with that.
Cravo, Pastor and Balbuena.
Thank you.
Is it?
Yeah,
is
it's on now. Again?
Cravo, Pastor and Balbuena.
Thank you.
In the best English.
As you can tell, he could do that much better than I could. So Daniel's advised many football players, leagues, federations, I believe, all around the world, particularly one notable, well, many notable, but one in particular was acting for the Brazilian Football Federation in relation to the Suarez bite, I believe, at the World Cup. So, just to get some house rules sorted, and just to know how the panel is going to operate, we want this to be an interactive session. We appreciate it's Monday morning, and the caffeine may not quite have got through into your bloodstream just yet. So, if you have a question during the session, please put your hand up. I'll try and come to you once the panelist has finished speaking. However, please make your questions concise as possible. I appreciate some of you, you know, may get tongue-tied, but just take a breath, get your questions sorted. Please, though, do not make a statement. We want to try and make it as interactive as possible and try to keep the conversation flowing throughout the panel discussion. So I hope you enjoy the session, and we shall now start. So, Trevor, with the increase in money and the seeming stability in football, particularly in Europe, do you think that the current regulatory system is working and encouraging investment in football?
Good morning, everybody. I certainly think that for us, and we work across North America, Europe, Gulf region, Asia Pacific, we haven't seen in the law firm as much interest as we've seen this year in investing in European football. Sure, I mean, I go back 20 years in football. There's always going to be a group of tire kickers, those people who come along and say they want to buy a football club merely because they just like to go and see a game and have a hot lunch but don't actually have any money, notwithstanding the nice suit they might wear. But beyond that, we are seeing real, credible, substantial interest, particularly in European football, still particularly in the Premier League, Serie A, La Liga in particular. And, you know, we are hopeful that in the next 3 months we will complete on a couple of transactions, one which will be quite eye-catching. And to that end, that is because investors are looking at football and saying there is more stability, there is more certainty about protecting it from the lunatics who've been running the asylum, so you can't go off and spend as much. But I'm not sure how long that's going to go on for, because with the changes, football doesn't seem able to properly regulate itself. It's continually operating in a sea change. And if you look at what's happened in the Football League in England recently, and we'll be debating that tomorrow afternoon, raising the amount of money people can lose, the changes UEFA are making, it begs the question whether or not we will get that stability for the long term. But certainly at this time, some very good deals out there, some very good ways of spending £655 million or more, and some great, great opportunities. And I think that if I was a serious investor involved in sport leisure, I'd be looking at European football, particularly some of the top clubs. Germany, I think, with the law changes there coming on board, that would be a good market to get into, but also some of the Scandinavian clubs.
Daniel, would you agree with that from your perspective, particularly from Brazil
and
South America?
I think the reality is that since FIFA decided to ban the TPO, which not necessarily represents that it will be extinguished, because the only thing that will happen is that there will be a strong black market on that, because the needs will keep the same in South America. But the fact is that the major investors that still want to keep in this market will try to buy small clubs in Brazil. We cannot forget that FIFA has already stated shyly, but it will tackle this ownership of clubs that will be used like just cocoon clubs or club bridge clubs. So we have to take care of that when we're going to make a consultation to a potential client like Ramon to say, and Trevor was working, so I'm joining him already. many people think that's going to be the easy way, but we have a very different, we are in a very different stage of our reality in terms of integrity, compliance, and governance, especially if you look at the German league, the Spanish league, and particularly the Premier League. We are living in another world, culturally, socially, economically. So it's very hard to say to a foreign investor, he has to do, I think, a double due diligence if he's going to do a deal in South America. That's the reality.
So, Ramon, from your perspective, being a man in the financial market, how do you see the regulation of ownership in football compared to the markets in which you're operating?
Well, I'm coming from a very regulated market in terms of the financial, even more in now as a fund manager now. The last 5 years, as you can see, the whole financial meltdown after post-2008. So in terms of a fund manager, it was very difficult in the market to invest because it's very restricted in terms of regulation. I would say it was too much because then you don't have the freedom to do as an investor to be the upside. When I'm coming to the football industry, I think it's still a Wild West kind of cowboys industry, frankly saying, because the regulating point of view is there but ignored, as potentially sometimes these lawyers can actually even confirm. Me as an ex-player, more than 20 years in the industry, done my contracts myself and make sure that the lawyers, the contract is all right. But I was dealing with agents, etc. in the past. It's, I think, a regulation in the industry as football with that kind of money now involved should be very good, because it will clean up a lot of the grey area scenario. But the problem we have, this is a long-term view. Government body like FIFA, UEFA, they're still having their own issues internally to start with. Leave alone down all the ligas or the federation around the globe to fight with their own kind of difficulties. La Liga himself, you know, distribution of the TV rights, Real Madrid, Barcelona. Yeah. It's year in, year out, always a big issue. The smaller clubs don't get the percentage you're supposed to get, like Real Madrid, Barcelona. As an investor, I would question to start with that if I wouldn't go to the La Liga. Premier League, a lot of money, great, fantastic. From my point of view, the gap between Premier League and the Championship is enormous. That's bankrupt, frankly saying. Because you've got £120 million now going forward as a Premier League. That's great. It looks fantastic. But we're still having not just a product sold on a shelf, we're having human being on the football pitch that still have to perform. So let's say you're going down and you have a budget of X. It's just completely gone because your budget is from 60 to 100 million going down to revenue stream from TV rights to 10 to 12 million pounds in the championship. So it's all great, a lot of money to invest, but the regulation and the gap between the two leagues is a big risk. That's my point of view. But at the same time, it's very attractive if it run it in the right way.
As an investor, what's attractive to you? Given that what you just said, it sounds like quite a risky business.
Well, the risk factor is the downside. If your players, even you're really looking to do, have quality players in place, etc., etc., if that season just did not work out and you battle the relegation, you really spend a lot of money, and then suddenly you might have 2 to 3 years to go up again.
So, Trevor,
these players will go out. You know,
well, it's interesting because if you look at England, for example, where the whole system, first of all, was if you decide to spend your way out of the Championship, which is first-tier football league, to get into the Premier League, you'd have to pay a penalty if you breach the rules. That's a good idea. And the idea that all the other clubs that have had to put up with the one that spent way too much money would get a benefit, now that's a good idea too. Now, if you look at that as a principle, what do we end up with in the end? A decision taken by whoever that a club that breached the rules would be fined, but it wouldn't go to the other clubs that suffered. It would go to charity, which I don't agree with. Secondly, and it's not public per se, but there's obviously been a lot of negotiations going on between Queen's Park Rangers and the powers that be. And the reported outcome is that the fine is much, much lower than would otherwise appear to have been the case. Now, we can't go into the precise details of that right now, but what I'm seeing is that football isn't actually regulating itself that well. And I think Ramon's point, come this January, January is usually a quieter transfer window, but given the price of failure in the Premier League or success in the Championship this season because of the new TV deal, I think you're going to see a huge amount of spending, which then creates opportunities for lots of people in this room, because we're seeing interest rates on transfer financing being relatively high. So if you're an investor, you can get a reasonably good return. And I know our team at the firm have been doing a lot of those deals. But certainly on Premier League TV monies, the rates have come down, you know, if you're borrowing against that. So football regulation, finance, it's an uneasy tension.
So we've looked at it from the investor's perspective, but from the football side of things, what would you say, or what's your view on who is a fit and proper person to invest within football, because that's something, you know, that they've tried to address in the Premier League, in the Football League, etc. And I'm sure
it's a fairly ironic question if FIFA are asking it.
Fair enough, but nevertheless, at a national level, there's still who should or shouldn't be allowed to invest in football, because if football is a business, granted that it has a community aspect to it in grassroots, but there's nothing to say that something that is a good business doesn't have good CSR policy in place and actually invest back into the sport. Who should qualify, and what mechanisms should be in place to make sure internationally that the right people are investing in football? Daniel?
I don't want to make a controversy, because we in South America were very angry with the decision on the ban of the TPO. And it's difficult to explain, because every year that I come back here with Trevor, I have to come back to the issue to say that it was a TPO was considered a bad thing here since the beginning, since the Tevez Mascherano case, and it was something that was dramatically treated by the press and there was a sporting impact by that time. It was critical, but the fact is we don't have this such of these amounts of television rights in South America, for instance. We don't have any other revenues except by forming good players to sell them. So it was a tool, and a tool is not bad or good by nature. It depends on how you use the tool. I would suggest something. For instance, there's a lot of gossip around, and many people also says that sometimes it's tricky or it's dangerous to have someone, a foreign investor, running an English club. So if I would just provoke the discussion, why don't we adopt a simple rule that we do not allow anymore a foreign investor buying an English club? because that's wrong. And that's exactly what happens with economic rights. You're going to see that in, and I was with Javier Tebas, the president of La Liga, in Geneva last weekend, discussing integrity, compliance, and good governance in football. And when I see integrity in a system, integrity has everything to do with ethics and moral also. And you cannot make weaker a party that is already weak in the system. So you cannot give to European clubs 7 years to adapt to licensing system, financial fair play, and just come to a poor market, because it is a poor market in South, in Africa, in South America, and say, okay, in 3 months, you're done. You don't have any more oxygen. What's going to happen, and particularly taking into consideration the level, the standard level, that of course we have to try to copy that, but it's very difficult. But in a few years, probably, and Tebas says that probably you're going to see that Premier League will be like NBA. And we are going to this path. I'm going to tell you one thing, and with all the respect to any English clubs, but I consider that Santos from Brazil, where Pelé played, for instance, São Paulo, River Plate, any player of these clubs that I've just mentioned that certainly has a huge history in the world of football, any player is an easy target for any player of even the second English league, which I think shows the huge gap that we have. And so when FIFA speaks, Trevor, about contractual stability, It's a very important, it's a beautiful concept, but we don't have contractual stability in South America because we have to sell all our players in the middle of the season. So it's difficult to speak about different realities.
So go on, Trevor.
I was just saying, your point though, I agree with Daniel, I think it's a European solution being imposed on a South American issue, and it's very difficult. Your point about who should run football and who should be involved in football, the problem is, in England, for example, it's an objective question. If you were dealing with the NHL or the NFL, it's subjective. They decide whether they like the look of you or not, and then you come through. And, you know, when we're working on a takeover or a sale or that type of deal, invariably, it will be right at the very end that the Premier League, Football League or whoever are looking at who's going to come in. In the US, it's different. You actually have to show you've got the money. You have to show that what you're about. You have to show your business contacts. You have to prove to them, not just on objective level, but subjectively, you're the right people, whatever that means, for that organisation. And we can learn from that.
So, Ramon, do the different standards internationally, does that create an opportunity for you, or is that too much of a risk? So going back to Daniel's point about, you know, more the ability of English clubs to basically buy players from all over the world at will. Is that something you think's good or bad?
I think the football industry, it should have a freedom of market. You can't restrict it. I think the South American market was leaving from exporting. We took in millions of players. Brazil, just Brazil. Not the whole South America, just Brazil himself was the most famous manufacturing, we call it, of players worldwide. Europe was one of the destinations. We took in the top ones, Ronaldo, etc., etc. We took in Japan, was one of the biggest import of Brazilian players, Asia, etc. To restrict them what we've been doing for 20, 30 years, as you say, it would just completely kill the whole market there. Because as I said, there's no much money there in terms of investors coming into it. Yeah, the investors coming in to buy potential academies, future talents, etc., etc. Where it's great for the country because they have a fantastic knowledge in manufacturing quality players because they've got the whole technique, football knowledge, etc. Compared to Europe, some of the European, I would say England, would have to learn very much from that because we don't see any academy knowledge here in this place. And this is one of the issues England has been the last 10 years addressing, because the England team, for such a big Premier League and a lot of money is involved, that should come year in, year out, young players coming out. It's not happening. They're buying foreign players with 20, 30, 40 million transfer, where they can invest maybe for 10 million in an academy, where potentially future young English player will be 20, 30, 40 million pounds, or play maybe abroad, in Madrid, in Barcelona, in Milan, etc. So I think the concept of England, and that's just a culture issue, potential issues, because England is very commercialised.
Yeah.
They love the commercial side. They don't see the fundamental side. And in football, it's very important to have a fundamental base because you need to have an academy. You need to have young players. These are the future. Because the Ronaldo's maybe today great. In 5-10 years' time, he'd be just sitting here like me, talking about his career.
So, point taken. But does that mean then you think to yourself, England, or do you think Spain, Portugal? What do you...
Well, England, of course, is attractive because you've got a very fixed income-generating revenue stream from the TV rights, one of the largest in the world. And it will definitely, without that, increase because the platform that created the Premier League is globally, with Asia coming above, and now it's more extra money with from the clubs in terms of qualifying the top five.
So if you were talking hypothetically, I know you're regulated and so on, would you have advised your clients to buy Fulham when they're in the Premier League?
At the moment, I would not buy
Premier League. They were in the Premier League.
When they were in the Premier League, even then, I wouldn't buy it.
Why?
At the moment, it just if I see the last 5 years, the gap between the Premier League and the Championship is, for me, too large. I think the arbitrage between the Championship going the Premier League is more interesting for any investor because you've got much more upside than buying already very high premium, because that's what you do, with potentially a massive debt. Because the last 10, 15 years, the Premier League clubs, it's been just accumulating a lot of debt, not run properly. I won't do that.
It's interesting because I remember a year ago when we were having a session in the main studio and one of my guests on the panel was chairing there, Matt Holsizer, who understands options. And he was saying, from an American perspective, he would effectively want to take an option on every championship club.
I remember that, yeah.
Because from that perspective, you know, three are going to go up, you make your money back. Of course, the Football League wouldn't allow that. That's another debate we could have. I mean, what we're seeing with Ramon's world, Daniel's world, is a lot more interaction with the governing bodies struggling to come to terms with, and I deliberately brought it on here so I didn't get it wrong, this whole thing about not clubs not entering into contracts where people are allowed to influence their business effectively.
Yeah.
And we were working on a situation last year where a club has ended up being fined. Club wasn't our client, investor was our client. What was interesting, the whole interrelationship between a lender and the control they were trying to exert over a club's business when that club got into trouble. And I think that lender in that particular situation went too far. But it's an interesting one is, you know, what if you're in the digital rights business or you're a sponsor and you enter into contract with a club? Effectively, Nike might be telling Brazil or whoever, you've got to pay these players, or you've got to get rid of so-and-so. And so the world that we live in, and also, for example, now, a lot of investors that own clubs have got interest in other businesses that are involved in sport. It's becoming more difficult to regulate clearly, and we heard from Prince Ali earlier, with transparency, and I think football's going to struggle.
Is there anything in football without any influence when a player is fielded or...
I don't know. I don't think so. What's happening with the goalkeeper of Manchester United? I don't know. He wanted to go. He wanted to stay. The freedom of stability of... I don't know. We are discussing between a player that was in Man United to go to Barcelona, top player, and still everybody says that he was supposed to go to Barcelona, but he didn't go. What's happening? He had this kind of influence that is like the devil from the economic rights. Trevor, just one thing. It's bad when FIFA or any other governing body doesn't go deeply, and it's difficult to make a general rule to apply all over the world. That's a fact. That's a fact. But the thing is, we have a huge problem of application of the Article 18 third.
Yeah.
So we have a huge problem with this article because many of the economic rights or the TPO agreements, we can call them pre-TPO agreements or pre-contracts of TPO agreements. Why? Because it's very common, at least in South America, I don't know, probably in Spain and Portugal for sure, that when an investor or a small academy, which is not part of the system of the organized football, as FIFA call it, and they bring you a player with 14 years old, okay? And it's written in an agreement that if this player becomes a professional, then the club will recognize a share of economic rights of this player. So we have plenty of these contracts that are existing now.
So would
and my question to Trevor, for instance, the club now in one of these situations where the player now at this month, at this right time became a professional, can recognize these economic rights, or if he does that and he has to do that according to the civil law of my country, in any country, but he will be sanctioned by FIFA.
But it's interesting because I can see a friend in the audience, and Ramon, probably the same thing for you. When someone's looking at creating an investment product and they're targeting football, particularly it's going to be the talent that people are interested in or the infrastructure. And if the rules start changing as they have done, then for those people who might be going down one route as to investing in players and then having to go down a different route, it becomes incredibly difficult to police.
So does the proposed FIFA club licensing, global club licensing system, is that the answer where all the clubs are licensed and therefore you have, through a contractual relationship, you have authority over all of those clubs?
No, you've seen improvements. You've seen improvement. No one's going to disagree that if you're improving facilities, if you're improving governance, that's a useful thing to do. FIFA TMS has helped considerably. I remember once trying to sign a Portuguese player. We actually worked out we'd signed him permanently without realising, because the system was so complicated and the wrong registrations had been issued to us at Bournemouth when I was chairman there. Now, of course, if you're doing an international transfer, you've got FIFA TMS, everything gets uploaded. Unless you happen to be United or Real Madrid, it usually works. But no one would argue, and that's why I've got every sympathy with Daniel and with Ramon, as to the regulations being fit for purpose in terms of third-party ownership, economic structures that have been in place. Or for Ramon, when he's advising his clients, if it's not the Premier League and they want to get into European football, where to put their money, you have to have certainty and stability. So that's why I said at the very beginning, we've seen improvements, but equally we're seeing changes that only makes it more uncertain for people trying to make investment decisions.
So we're going to come on to TPO in more detail. It's been talked about a fair bit, and it's the sort of elephant in the room at the moment, so we will address that point before the panel session's over, but which will be fun. But I wanted to ask Ramon, we were discussing before the panel session about some of the idiosyncrasies of English football in particular, but across the UK. Why do you think there is a lack of player involvement in the ownership of football clubs in the UK compared to the rest of Europe?
I think the UK is just a culture issue again, you know. I think it's the perception of the football player from the background, where they're coming from. I've been living here for 17 years now, so I got to know a little bit of culture in England. And lucky enough, I was born and grew up in Switzerland, had my education over there in Grasshopper, Zurich, and a great pilot kind of example at the time, because make sure the football player has an education as well, so at the university in Zurich, etc., etc., and the financial sector. This is the reason why I went into the financial sector after 20 years of football. Where in England, again, it's very commercial and it's a trading country, you know, they're trading. So it's just a culture issue. You see, Germany, the Bundesliga is well run in terms of the Bundesliga, the clubs. But at the same time, you can see also how many football players, ex-football players, really are involved in the teams. Not just in the national team, but also in the individual football teams. And I think it is very good, because no better knows better than us. Well, we started the 8 years old young boy going through the dressing room until you professional and going through all the rank, with from the tea lady up to the manager, etc., etc., etc. How the whole structure works, how the philosophy works, how the whole trading and players, agent, etc. A guy who comes in, who might be an accountant,
so the scheme,
he had no clue how that works. Because it's a grey black area down there. Transfer period, he was just like, whoa, these agents coming from Brazil has no clue what he's doing. When this accountant has to do a trade for £20 million, a lot of money. In my business, that's a lot of money. But there's somebody who has no sophistication or experience, but because he has an accountant, or he's a lawyer, but has no experience in the football industry, he's been put there because the owner thinks he knows the business.
So just to run through that scheme that you were involved with, that pilot, you went to university and they gave you a work placement with an international bank, which is something that I thought earlier that was particularly interesting. So you had the skill set, you had the commercial exposure and the education. Would you, Trevor, having been a chairman of a club, would you like to...
Can I just mention a quick... going about fit and proper investors. I think it's two things that have to look into, the fit and proper. The investor will come in is what is actually the plan. Is it a 2 years plan to get out, like a private equity, or a 5 to 10 years? Because this is very crucial, because the guy who comes in, wants to go out in 2 years and he's fed up. He just cuts the money to invest.
Yeah. I would say it's interesting. I think the quality of investment advice, when we've looked at some of the deals where we've started working for clubs or owners after deals have been completed, is astonishingly bad. You might say lawyers aren't supposed to give investment advice, but look at some of the deals we've worked on and thinking, how on earth did their lawyers allow them to get into a situation where they've been ripped off by people involved in football, let's put it that way. And you see people racking up debt on clubs that didn't have debt, and they really haven't been helped on their journey. So I think there is a considerable lack of good firm professional advice, whether it's accountants, lawyers, or financial management. I remember when I was on gardening leave before I went to Pinsent Mason's, Colin Stewart, a big financial management company, they wanted to do stuff in sport, and I was talking to them. And they thought, this is great, we can professionalise it. But nearly every agent they spoke to didn't want them to go near their clients to try and help manage their assets. And it was fascinating. And I don't think much has changed. But
I think it's like, listen, a football investment is a private equity investment. So it could be a high risk, of course, and high return, like any other investment in the private equity sector. I mean, if I'm looking as a private equity investor, the first thing I look into is the management team. Mm-hmm. That's the number one. And if I see the management team is very weak, I need to add knowledge into it, you know. The problem we have in football, like in all the other businesses, football is very limited of sophistication and knowledge, because there are just guys being trustworthy people being put into it because there's nothing in the market. So it's very important, fit and proper scenario. I think football clubs, in the academy point of view, should create already an education system as a base, as a fundamental thing. They have got football players, get educated, but also have knowledge of football. So we're creating, in the future, the potential managers or run the football clubs in terms of... Because in private equity, that's the first thing I'm looking into it. Real estate, technology, you name it. And football is very grey in that part.
Daniel, do you have anything to add?
No, I just... I didn't want to pass a bad impression about investments in South America. You have also, like everything almost, you have the good part and the bad part. The bad part is our structures are not mature as you have here in Europe. Just for the ones that doesn't know, we don't even have a league. In Brazil, we don't have a club's league. In the past, we had the Club of the 13, which deals just with television, right? But it was not a proper league that could lead any discussion that was on the interest of the clubs. And we cannot expect that CBF, who is the arm of FIFA, can do that. And you can realize that very easily because you have FA and you have the Federation, you have the Premier League in two very distinct roles and very well performed as far as we can consider. So the fact that we don't have a league, the fact that our governing bodies, and this I think that we could make an analysis kind of heavy over FIFA, because FIFA allowed the South American Confederation take part in... Because if you realize this, the so-called scandal of FIFAgate, the pocket was the South American pocket that was impacted. There was people involved in many, many states, but the money we're speaking here, I've just told you that we don't have almost anything else in economic rights to explore. Mm-hmm. Was an important tool. So we don't have a lot of revenues from television rights, but the few money that we have from that stayed in the middle of the path because it didn't reach to the base, to the clubs, and not even to CONMEBOL. This is important. The governing body didn't get the money. It's not even to say, okay, our UEFA, our CONMEBOL kept the money and didn't divide it equally with the clubs that took part in the Copa Libertadores. No. Not even the money arrived there. And this is a very sad thing to say, but just to prove you the gap that we have. So in this case specifically, just to give you a testimony, I represented 5 small Uruguayan clubs. They make a denounce. They denounced before a criminal court the former president of the Argentinian Federation, Julio Grondona, former vice president of FIFA, many committees, and Eugenio Figueiredo, that is now arrested, former president of Uruguayan Federation, also CONMEBOL. And when they made that, after a while, I was hired to represent them before the ethics committee of FIFA. At that time, Michael Garcia was presiding the investigation chamber of the committee, and he did a great job that time. Everybody knows why he left. It's another story. But in the end, when we made this complaint, FIFA, at in a first moment, exactly like it happened with CONCACAF, sent to CONMEBOL and say, you submit that, you go to make an investigation before your ethic committee that was recently created 1 month ago because they saw that something was coming. But not only up now, nothing was not open any procedure against to investigate that, as our clients, the director of these clubs, were suspended immediately because it seems that they were just kind of making a kind of pressure over the board of CONMEBOL. So that's the reality there. So it's very difficult to say to an investor that he can do something in South America unless he's very well advised. The good part of that is that, of course, as you know, with the devaluation of our money in general in Argentina, Uruguay, you can name it, you can invest a lower amount of money and create a lot of possible talents there. And that's possible with a good advisory and not buying, please, don't buy associations, because you can never know what's under the carpet. You have to buy companies.
So Ramon, did you have something to add?
I understand that anyway completely. You know, South America was been created the last 20, 30 years. And there's been, and I think, crucial point back to it, I think it's a very good momentum now with government bodies like FIFA, UEFA, and I think specific FIFA in this point of view, where it's now a complete transition of cleaning up, transparency, etc., etc. FIFA's government body and should be the father of all the football, to start with. So you respect the father, always. We don't have that yet. We need to get that respect back. Why? A father gives rules at home. When you have to come home, when you have to study, etc. That's the same thing. FIFA should come back into it. Financially, either the father's coming or is responsible for the family. So federations are the arms and the sons of all the FIFAs. So first thing has to come into it is centralizing and transparent distribution of all these federations. We'll get, frankly saying, quite a lot of money. We don't see the academy side coming into it. We don't see any growth in certain part. South America, Africa, and certain Asian countries need that development, knowledge, coaching, etc. Now, we're talking England, first country in economically, we say. Premier League, top TV rights. The Federation of England should be earning a lot of money. I don't see any quality academy in this country.
Well, I agree with that one.
No, you made a debate. For the last 10 years, where were they the last 10 years?
No, I think that's
unfair. I've been going around the country, and the only thing I see is Premier League getting bigger and bigger. There's a conflict of interest between FA and the Premier League because they're not working together, like in Germany. Look at Germany, Bundesliga. I will have to say, great example. Bundesliga works together. 10 years later, World Cup winners, great academy, and very good Bundesliga run. The clubs are healthy. We're here, 5 times more money, everybody in debt, nearly bankrupt balance sheet.
I'm going to have to move on. We need to talk about third-party ownership. We haven't got much time left. But I will say that from listening to this discussion, that obviously it sounds like, you know, it seems so obvious though, but good governance structures in place, transparency, then we'll create an environment and educating athletes will create more athlete involvement and better run clubs. Go on then, quickly.
It's got to be real. It's not going to be lip service.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole thing we heard Prince Ali earlier. Can the current crop of candidates for the FIFA election actually do anything to achieve what Ramon has said? I doubt it, aside from Prince Ali.
It's funny to realize how strong is the fiscalization and everything over the players and the clubs in general, and how flexible is the compliance required by FIFA over the confederations. Yeah. It doesn't exist, because these people that were involved in CONCACAF scandal and CONMEBOL scandal, because I think it's more CONMEBOL than FIFA scandal, actually, the name, and these people are around for 20 years. So everybody knows who they are. And there's no compliance at all required on this level.
Protecting the players' point of view again, you know. Don't forget, football's a social aspect. We're helping people with a very bad background, potentially, but quality talent to come to the stage of the world and earn some money. Most of the players, maybe not potentially Europeans, but Africans, South Americans, background for them. to give them a home, a certain country. That's home for them. That's their family. For it's very important to protect that side as well. That means also anybody, I agent or football clubs come in, he has to take responsibility. He takes a son but in his house.
It's an important.
Then we're moving on to your third party ownership. You take that.
Yeah, that's what.
And then they get into players in Africa. Now, I think it's very difficult in certain countries in Africa to actually try and say, well, we're going to have this whole new system of regulation and you've got to abide by it. The same thing about South America. Different countries, different jurisdictions evolve at different rates.
Yeah. That's global sport, isn't it? The evolution of international sport.
So we work one Premier League club, have 12 agents claiming to represent the same player. Who do you deal with?
Well, that's the point on third-party ownership, the agent involvement.
The player,
before we get into, in record time of 2.5 minutes, I'm told by this clock, on third-party ownership, so note that. Can I just get a show of hands before we start discussing anything on third-party ownership? Who thinks third-party ownership stroke investment, I know it's quite broad, is a good thing? What would we say? 15?
Would you allow it? Would you allow it?
More hands, please.
Okay.
When you see good thing.
Okay. You should be a lawyer.
My lawyer.
You learn from the lawyer. Okay. This is very paragraph.
Who thinks a third-party ownership or third-party investment is a negative? It has a negative impact on football players. Show of hands. Wow. Who's indifferent about it? Most of you.
It's a great audience we have here.
So. On third-party ownership, the new regulations came into force 1st of May. Daniel, just very quickly, can you just give a recap of, you know, what the effect has been? Obviously, you've seen it's now difficult, got the regulations trying to comply with. What's the reality on the ground in Brazil?
Yeah. The thing is, it was a political agenda of the Premier League and UEFA, and I don't blame them for that, but we have to accept that and say that openly and don't come with that stories about human slavery and everything, because as I said, economic rights or TPO is a tool. You can use it for bad. In South America, we use that because, as I said, we don't have any other sources. And I've worked for many years. I'm still working for Internacional from Porto Alegre. We sold Pato to Milan. I've took part in the transfer of Oscar to Chelsea, Sandro to Tottenham, and so many, and I'll tell you, Oscar, and by the way, that's a good thing to say. Oscar and Sandro, they became players in the Premier League because in the beginning there was an investor that helped the Brazilian club to form these players. That's the way it happens. So, of course, you have stories about small kids that come from Nigeria, but it happens with or without economic rights. It's simply as that. You have an agent or someone that sponsors the family and brings the player to Europe or even to South America if he comes from a poorest South American country. The thing is...
Sorry, Trevor, would you agree with that?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, I think that there needs to be respect for systems such as South America that rely heavily on this, and we should allow it there. But I do think that there are negatives, particularly on team selection, timing of transfers. If you're an investor and you put your money in and we're going to get a certain return over 3 years, you'll be agitating to move a player out. And then that conflicts with perhaps the manager, the coach, the board, and so on. That creates issues. And also it can destabilize the playing field. Because if I happen to be a club that is able to bring in six players where I own 50% of the economic rights, and I'm playing a team that doesn't have six players like that, that other team would actually have to pay 100% to get the players in. So you're distorting competition to an extent. So there are some issues as to how you deal with it.
Again, the competition, if you think about markets, is already distorted because I don't have so much money as you have here. So contractual stability is a reality that you can experience here, particularly in England, but maybe in Germany, but not in South America. We had a club called Guarani. It was a former Brazilian championship in 1980-something. And this club was leading the championship in Brazil in the first half. And he has to sell eight players. And he was released. So there's no... It's already distorted if you think about these big gaps between markets. If you're speaking about the same clubs in the same competition, maybe yes, maybe then I agree with you. But one thing, we're not here making the defense that the market should be like it was that jungle as before. We are pro regulations. We should, the market on TPO should be regulated with clear rules. And in terms of integrity, transparency, and compliance, it will be a mess. Because I'm going to give you an example to circumvent the rules. Just one example. In Argentina.
For free. That's unusual for a lot.
No. You have to make the papers later. It's not so. But the thing is, in Argentina, players still has at least 15% over their own transfer in the future. So at least, so an Argentinian club can agree with 30% to the player, and this player, by a private agreement with an investor or if an agent, can give this 30%. Is there an economic rights deal or not? Is a white horse? It is a white horse. It's not allowed. Okay, you just paint him a little bit, and then it's a zebra. No, it keeps being a white horse. So we're doing economic rights still in South America and in Europe, in Portugal and Spain, with very inventive ways to do that. So just to in a synthesis, there will be a black market, will be a mess in terms of integrity, because big clubs that has strict control will not be allowed to use that. But all the other small clubs, they will keep using that. I can bet that.
Ramon, what's your...
Well, from players' point of view, as I say, the responsibility lies on the one who's actually taking care of the player point of view. If it's a third person has my rights, I never had that, because that wasn't the issue at that time in Europe. In South America, yes, because that's the way they need it. Because that's football teams, etc., that just need financially, they were not strong enough. And if somebody was a football fan, he loved it, he invested into the club, invested into the academy, etc., etc. And I think from my point of view, the regulation point is a very difficult, complex way to structure that, because, as you say, there are ways to go around, etc. Now, you might leave this aside. I think the crucial part is there's no index whatsoever in terms of the market, what the players be value. I'm talking now the Manchester City guy from Monaco, 21 years old, £50 million. He's 21 years old, £50 million. What does he say? It's kind of, I'm going to the market and I'm buying, British Telecom for £50 million. Why? Because the index gives me, that's the valuation, that's the balance sheet, etc., 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 etc. I think if you create kind of, because now we're talking much more money. 20, 30 years ago, you couldn't do that because that was just the bread and butter and a smaller amount of money. Now, with that kind of money, that kind of transfers in Europe, specific in Europe, maybe in South America and other places, should be another completely different index, because that's Asian index, you've got South American index, and the markets is the same thing. That creates already, with that, it's already a kind of regulation, because people have a reference what they have to pay for. And the investor knows exactly what potentially might be the upside. Yeah, but that's, again, very difficult how to create an index. A lot of people, we in the financial market, we discuss with a lot of analysts how to do that. It's very difficult, but it's doable.
Trevor,
no, I was just about
we have to wrap up in a
but
minute.
But again, the globalization of the game and the amount of money involved in it is driving all of this sort of discussion. Because at the very heart of it, when a client or a contact comes to us and says, we want to buy this club, we want to sell that club, one of the key things we're doing at the moment is looking at the data, because the growth in data and analysis of players, if you are looking continually at whether or not a player, for example, in German second division is going to be good to play in English first or Czech second or whatever, and you're looking for where the greatest value is. And so the idea about whether you'd pay 50 million or whether, we're talking to a championship club who had an offer of 7 million from another championship club. The transfer market is all very subjective. And we're seeing the more scientific assessment now, because the likes of your clients, private equity, globalization, and particularly because of the commercial rights, is what we're seeing really driving investment in football at the moment. That is down to understanding talent.
So I'm going to have to, we should have wrapped up, so I'm going to have to draw it to a close. Just a few quick questions, though. Do you think FIFA DRC, what sanctions do you think FIFA DRC will take dispute resolution chamber or committee, sorry, will take if they find third party ownership agreements that have been signed after the 1st of May, if any?
They can apply any sanction that is in this disciplinary code, but the thing is, I was discussing with Marc Godard, the manager, the general manager of the TMS, last weekend in Geneva, and I see a bigger problem than that, because if you are speaking about sanctions, you have to have, everybody demands a clear system, and at this right moment, I don't know how they're going to sanction. Why? Because the transfer matching system was supposed to work every time that you have an international transfer. But in regards to economic rights, it doesn't work like that. Mm. It's just a registration on everything that is already going on, which means that the player is already registered with Flamengo, for instance, and Flamengo has to list it and to say the share that was given or it was traded with someone, with the investors, which means that you don't have a transfer to trigger the eye of FIFA. But FIFA has already the data to sanction someone because they have all the map. I wonder if FIFA would analyze the thousands of informations and start sanctioning all over the world. Probably they're not going to do that. But the other problem that I see is the jurisdiction problem. Because since we're not speaking properly about a transfer, and it's clear that when they cut, because the next step is when the transfer is done, they will check the data that was, the information that was given by the club back there. In this first part of the job. But who's going to sanction now these players that FIFA, for instance, if FIFA could spend some time and go there and say, okay, this, I'm going to check this contract that Flamengo or Fluminense did with someone, and here is a violation of article of these new regulations. Will FIFA sanction? Will be the CBF who's sanctioned? Nobody knows. You're not going to see any letter of FIFA explaining that. So it's not clear. And this is, in any legal, reasonable, legal system, is not possible to live with this doubt.
Trevor, then Ramon, yeah, to finish.
So I have... You're very naughty. You shouldn't do that again. I think that's what we'll see, because it's the same thing with financial fair play and regulation. They come up with great systems. It all reads really well. Looks like a good idea. When it comes to it, it will depend. If it's Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, that could be very different to if it were Perugia or a club that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you get double standards. And I think with Daniel, it's a lawyer's dream. There'll be so many ways of challenging it and taking it and dragging it out that they'll just give up.
A sportsman's...
And the bill is higher and higher.
Reasonable bill.
Oh, no.
It keeps you playing
going back to sanctioned players, that's wrong. As a player point of view. Because the players, third party owner, it's not his fault. He's a football player. He has to play football. He's potentially 18, 19 years old. He won't have a clue what's going behind the scene. He got an agent in front of him. I got this investor guy, et cetera, et cetera. Doing the whole dream, Real Madrid, Barcelona, you name it. Why sanction a player? If FIFA start to do this, then FIFA is not the father. Yeah. There's a sanction of the investor, potentially.
I should be more disciplined, shouldn't I? I should be a better father.
I'm talking as an ex-player.
Yeah, yeah.
I look up to FIFA. I was always looked after all the time. And for me, FIFA was my protector. And anything, dispute, etc., with my agent, etc., yeah. I go to FIFA. Listen, this agent is done harm.
Well,
I wouldn't go to Real Madrid.
To talk about agents.
You know, but I'm not taking. For me, I want to protect the player. So I have no problem the third party comes in investing it, but that's his issue and his problems. And risk he takes into it. The player is there to play football.
So that means, yeah, another problem that, yeah, the players, as we talked about earlier, in your background, you were university educated, you negotiated all your contracts, you went to lawyers to make sure that they were legally sound. There's not that many players who are in that position, and often I would say that they're encouraged not to be in that position because it's not advantageous.
This is the reason why. They're taking advantage of a very unsophisticated industry in terms of the player's point of view. Forget about the other ones because it's also unsophisticated, but it's just the player's point of view. I want to protect them.
Well, given the huge sums of money that are involved in the game and looking at the average wages, you know, within England, for example, at the moment, even in League One and the Championship, multiple thousands of pounds a week. What still beggars belief is that, we are not touching on this session, I know, but the whole move away from a regulation of agents to, again, back to the Wild West. Because we have been in situations, anecdotally, where you've seen clubs trying to do deals with agents where, in respect of players, and the agent has been saying, well, pay me X and I'll get the player to accept Y, when the Y is actually less than was originally on offer. And I think the players don't see that. They put trust in their agents. And yes, there are some very good agents, but boy, there's a number of people out there that are causing a lot of issues for their clients.
Ramon, I don't know. I don't know. And it's just a question because I've spoken to
many... Daniel, sorry.
Go ahead. I'll jump in your list.
I think we can continue talking about this. Yeah. We can talk about the influence of agents. We can talk about other... I'd say there are some, you know, it can sound quite negative, you know, working in the legal side of sport. It can sound negative. We're always like, this is wrong, that's wrong. Lawyers love, in particular, to focus on the negative. There are lots of good, really positive things going on. I remember going to the European Commission, listening to the league, doing stuff with prisoners on setting up their own football league and stuff like that. There's a lot of good things going on in football. However, there seems like a lot to improve on.
Can I just say that? You get the wrong impression. For the three of us, we've known each other many years. The excitement, the passion, the inspiration we get day in, day out, it's not, as Ramon knows, it's not about generating fees. It is a fantastic industry to work in. And for all the problems we've discussed, we could have discussed hundreds, if not thousands, of opportunities and really great things that are happening in the world of football.
So there is a lot that's been done. I think if we look back over the last 20 years in particular, I think football has moved on a lot. I've written a piece, if you're bored, and you want to spend some time about how this is just a teething, we're in a stage with development in football where it's maturing, as you discussed. And I think the internationalisation of football and the problems that throws up is like any market, and we'll see better regulation. But I'd love Ramon to be more involved, I think, at FIFA or something, getting involved with the player development.
That's a different conversation, that one.
But thank you all for your time. If you can join me in thanking the panellists for a great job and sharing their views. Thank you for your patience. We ran over a little bit. Hope you enjoy the rest of the convention.